We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Tuesday RotoWire NFL podcast, the Jake and Joe edition, sponsored by Dynasty Owner. Will take place every Tuesday, obviously, up until the NFL playoffs. Today's show is going to focus primarily on the news and notes that have occurred in training camp the last couple days, but also keeper and dynasty conversations, some strategies involved with that, and revisiting our previously mentioned strategies with those redraft or the auction formats of the last 2 weeks. We're getting closer to the NFL season. It's time to get you guys set for your draft, so stick around for the show. Welcome to the Tuesday, August 9th edition of the RotoWire NFL podcast, brought to you by Dynasty Owner. I'm Joe Barlow. You can follow me at JB Fantasy Sports. And alongside me, as always, is Jake Tarski at RotoJake. Before we get underway with the podcast, let's get a word from our sponsors, Dynasty Owner. Do you love fantasy sports? Are you ready for a new challenge this year? Dynasty Owner is the new way to play fantasy football with real NFL salaries, adding the strategies of running an actual franchise. Dynasty Owner provides a unique and challenging experience that will test your skills as an owner and general manager. You'll have complete control of your team's future. You can build the draft, make trades, sign free agents, and manage your team's salary cap. Can you create a dynasty of champions? Sign up at dynastyowner.com and use promo code ROTO5, that's ROTO5, to receive $5 off your new team. You are listening to right now the Expert League Dynasty Owner Champion. So obviously they're a sponsor of ours. But I've been also uniquely successful, and of course, I had to tear down my team afterwards because that's how it works. I will not have a dynasty of champions, but you out there might be able to if you join that program. I love the platform, and I'll keep touting it.
We got a couple of champions in this dynasty champions, which is fitting of our keeper dynasty strategy later on here. I've our 14 team staff dynasty league. I don't think I've ever finished below second place. It's always been a winner or runner up.
That's what happens when you draft JT and Derrick Henry in the first two rounds.
And Stephon Diggs and Keenan Allen and Michael Pittman. Pittman was a rookie draft pick that we have, and we'll get to that a little bit later. You guys let me have James Cook down at 13 this year, so we're gonna take that, and we'll talk about some picks here. But first, there's been a pretty big stack of camp news that we probably need to touch on here before diving into the strategy a bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different angles we can go with this. We're gonna be talking a little bit of Superflex because I was in a Superflex draft that completed last night. I actually don't think this QB was drafted, and that might be a mistake because he seems to be the clear front runner for QB1. Now, we have heard, and this is obviously alluding to Baker Mayfield, that Matt Rhule has said he will not make the decision until week 3. Like, the week 3 preseason game will be when he announces, or more than likely announces, who will be winning the competition between Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. Sure seems as if it's Baker Mayfield's job to lose at the moment, and if anyone watched the Panthers last year, it's no question as to why that is Baker Mayfield's job to lose. Are you interested at all in Baker Mayfield as even QB20? That would be in the Matt Ryan range. I think Trevor Lawrence and Fields and those guys go a bit higher than that.
So this is an interesting part. I mean, I don't know if I've got a chance to say on this show how, I think Baker Mayfield got a pretty raw deal in Cleveland here. I mean, that whole franchise mismanagement, you could do a whole show on that. But, he played through an injury when he could have probably sat out the year. And then he kind of gets kicked to the curb there. So I still think he's got plenty left. I think he should be able to beat Sam Darnold relatively easily. I mean, Sam Darnold's fantasy scoring last year, I mean, he's not even relevant from a fantasy standpoint, but it came from a few fluky rushing touchdowns early on. And Baker Mayfield should win this job, and I think that's a good sign for players like DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson if you're holding Terrace Marshall in a dynasty format like I happen to be. That's a good sign for them. And I think, you know, when it comes down to it, in your standard 12 team redraft, you're not going to worry about Baker, but you can get him at a pretty low price if you end up in a, the punt running back strategy in standard, when you talk super flex, some people will punt quarterbacks and just load up on the best skill players later and hope the quarterbacks will come to him. Baker Mayfield might be a late round target if you get down to there. You know, for perspective here, we have six or five drafts from this RotoWire Invitational League that we're going simultaneously, and one managed to finish. No Baker Mayfield taken, of course. It's the standard 12 team, start one quarterback, but Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson were taken there. And then below that, you know, you're looking at Cousins, Carr, Tua, Fields here. So I don't know. Baker gets into that conversation. I mean, will he outscore Deshaun Watson this year? Probably. You know, just because of the suspension, but you know, then will he outscore Trevor Lawrence? How much is Trevor Lawrence going to improve here? And that becomes interesting here. So I'm fine on Baker. I'm sure that he's someone, like I said, we can probably ignore in 12 team redrafts, definitely on the radar in super flex. And I can guarantee you that more than once this year, Baker Mayfield will come up in our waiver wire show as a streaming option. He's going to be somebody that you can stream and maybe even hold on to for a couple weeks stretches here if, you know, your quarterback goes down or something along those lines. I mean, there's a lot of variables with this Carolina offense going on. You know, on paper, they have skilled receivers. On paper, they have the best pass catching running back in the league, arguably, in Christian McCaffrey while he's healthy. I mean, this is as good of, if not better, setup, arguably, than with Cleveland in terms of weapons. And, you know, if Baker Mayfield's healthy and can win this job as we expect him to do, he'll be an impact player at some point this year.
Yeah, I want to look at the strength of schedule that'll be updated as we get closer to the start of the season. You're right. I think Baker will at times make the podcast rounds for us on the Tuesdays when we're recommending waiver wire pickup. Sure. I'm not convinced the Panthers will be successful, and it's only because under Matt Rhule, they have been, I don't know, at best incompetent, and at worst just like completely outright miserable. And this was whether it be Cam Newton or Sam Darnold or anything else. I think the Matt Rhule era has been tremendously bad, and I'm not just crediting that to the CMC injuries and everything else. I just think the Panthers are mismanaged, and you know, we were all in on Terrace Marshall last year if he was in the right position, right? And he wasn't. They never used him in the correct spot, and he struggled.
Yeah, now I'm thinking of what the heck am I going to get out of Terrace Marshall in a dynasty league? Yeah. Obviously, I'm not ready to give up on him after year one, but I have legitimate concerns about where he's just going to go moving forward. Definitely not going to cut him by any means in that type of format, you know, where you're rostering 20 players year after year. But there are some current concerns for sure.
Yeah, Chris Liss, right, friend of the RotoWire programs, I think put a bet down on the Panthers to outright win the division. And obviously it was a long odds bet. He was more or less saying it's the Buccaneers are going to fall off, whatever else. If there is, like, I would sooner pick the Falcons to win the NFC South division than the Panthers. That's how bad I believe this Matt Rhule roster to be. It's Matt Rhule. It's not the roster. You mentioned all those guys, those pieces. I'm not convinced that coaching staff can do anything correct.
Hey, I mean, to Rhule's credit, he's had, you know, some back and forth at quarterback. He's never really had a fully healthy McCaffrey. You know, we'll see what happens here. I think Baker's probably the best quarterback he's had since he's been there in his tenure.
Yeah.
And you know, that reminds me, I think our over under win total show last year was one of our pretty popular, more fun ones. We both, our best bets were successful, and I think for the most part we were over 500. Or I mean, that's not for the most part, that's a yes or no question.
And I believe below we were 600, I think.
Yeah, so hopefully I mean, definitely we'll bring that back as one of the last shows here towards the end of the preseason, once we have a little more sample size and we've had a chance for, you know, the standard injuries that are going to happen to play out here. So we'll definitely bring that back, and we'll have some interesting things to say about the Panthers, I'm sure.
I thought you were going to say as the Romeo Dobbs hype train continues, then we'll have to be able to come back to this conversation. We'll probably talk about the hype train players in a little bit, or even later on in other episodes, because obviously week one preseason hype, I feel like it's at a fever pitch right now with all the guys that are supposed to look amazing as they do.
Yeah. Just an anecdote on the Dobbs hype train. Our Vikings fan took him in the 12th round of the RotoWire Invitational. So that I think that's the biggest I've seen him as far as that hype train goes. So hey, this is very interesting. That's going to change on a lot of players. It's going to inflate and deflate on a lot of players. You know, maybe Marquez Callaway style. You know, sometimes those hype trains really get going, and we'll hopefully help you be able to adjust to that.
The Callaway name pull is pretty good. Other injuries that occurred over the past couple days, again, you know, not just today, but yesterday, Jameis Winston had evidently rolled his ankle, and I saw the report and I'm like, okay, whatever, he rolled the ankle. But then it was like, he's getting medical attention and they're looking at this and I'm like, oh no, is this one of those things where it was clearly more severe and yet we can't quite say like a wink, wink, but a negative thing? Mm-hmm. No, in fact, it's just a day-to-day injury, shockingly, right? Rolling your ankle. As an NFL player, can mean that you will come back in a day or two.
It's exactly. And he's also coming back from an ACL tear, though. So as he continues to, get a little banged up, it's worth monitoring. Mm-hmm. They actually, I forget who they were rolling out after he went last year, or Taysom Hill maybe. After,
right, it would have been Taysom Hill.
Yeah, I guess so. Now Andy Dalton's around. So they actually have someone that has shown they can be a 500 quarterback. But no, this isn't the kind of thing I'm worried too much about yet.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about Deontay Johnson, who continues to miss time with his hip injury. The Steelers overall have been dealing with a bit of wide receiver issues. Claypool, I think, came back
I want to point out too, with the Steelers, that a lot of people, you know, we even wrote a note that said, oh, George Pickens listed as starter on the depth chart. But you have to remember that, you know, a lot of these teams with these depth charts, when Deontay Johnson and Claypool are out, yes, of course, George Pickens is going to be listed as the starter on the depth chart there.
Right.
And again, he's someone that, for all intents and purposes, is a late round dart and redraft. And obviously, outlook changes just a little bit in Dynasty.
The training camp hike, George Pickens has been getting some. I just saw a tweet that I don't think was joking, comparing him to Randy Moss. We've gone too far if we're doing this thing where we're describing a player to one of the best wide receivers of all time. Like that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. Saying that, well, I mean, the ESPN whole you got Moss thing is getting described for everybody now who just has one good play. So you know, maybe we exaggerate that a little bit. It's gonna, you know, I'm gonna make that blunder, the Pickens Pickett blunder for the Steelers. You know, that'll be the connection in like 3 years in Pittsburgh. But I'm gonna probably interchange Pickens and Pickett like six more times on the show before the season.
I'll make the joke for my co-host on the SiriusXM Friday shows, Mario Puig. He'll say, yeah, I'm sure Pickens will throw a trick pass to Pickett as a slot wide receiver at some point. He just keeps calling Kenny Pickett a really good slot receiver in 3 years. And at this point, the way the bad reports have been going for Kenny Pickett, I would not be surprised if we're trending in that direction. Other injury news, Kenneth Gainwell having a hip injury right now. I think that's important only because there is a little bit of depth, not in years past, like when we had Jordan Howard as your RB4 for the Eagles, but Boston Scott is there and has been productive the time he's been around. They also got the Oklahoma product, Kennedy Brooks, as well, who I think at least I was a little bit of a fan of coming out of college, and I thought it was an interesting landing spot. Kenneth Gainwell is a sleeper favorite for a lot of people who are looking for those backup running backs, and we all know that Miles Sanders seems allergic to the end zone. So it's one of those deals where the backup who could be successful certainly is a good pass catcher. Maybe there's some value to me, especially if he's only missing – possibly missing week one preseason. Yeah. It's a non-starter.
I put it on there because this gives us a good chance to talk about Kenneth Gainwell a little bit.
You're excited about that.
I just missed out on Gainwell in our RotoWire Invitational. Thank you, Jim Coventry, if you're out there, if you're listening to me.
Right now.
He sniped me right before, and I ended up, you know, I hadn't taken a running back since round three, so I ended up with Michael Carter, who I guess maybe we'll discuss in just a second here, and Ronald Jones, but definitely a downgrade from Gainwell. Now, part of me thinks that maybe that's a little self-confirmation bias because I do have Gainwell rostered in my powerhouse dynasty team, as if I need more sleepers to emerge and continue to dominate that league. But, you know, he had some good – there's also maybe some good touchdown luck last year. He found the end zone in some games where he didn't have a lot of when he didn't have a lot of touches necessarily, but I think he does have a chance to emerge to a 10-15 touch a game guy, which is, you know, kind of where he was getting at towards the end of last year under certain circumstances. And he can, you know, he's a decent pass catcher. He's really effective on draw plays, if I remember that correctly. Yeah. So you know, with all the weapons on this Eagles team, it'll be tough to spread the ball or distribute the ball and make sure someone like Gainwell gets his touches. But again, I don't know. Gainwell could just be one injury away from finishing as an RB1 too. So
I just saw this pass across my Twitter, and it was a little bit earlier in the day, but Jakeem Grant, wide receiver for the Browns, was carted off with what appeared to be a lower body injury. Mm-hmm. This is only important because they had David Bell just come off the PUP list. They've been dealing with a myriad of other injuries at wide receiver. Amari Cooper has been healthy, but it's been just about nobody else. especially depending on how long that Watson suspension is, we're looking at the Browns offense as, I think, bottom third, like 27th, 28th overall. And that it's if Kareem Hunt actually plays, and Kareem Hunt, of course, has now talked about his trade request too. Like, this is a really interesting situation that I think could matter. Let's just say Hunt does get traded, which I don't think is likely. Let's play the hypothetical. There's a few landing spots where a guy that's going currently in the 6th, 7th, 8th round could be like a 3rd or 4th round kind of landing spot if he plays 3-down work.
Yeah. No, I could absolutely see that. And what interests me even more is what he potentially does to somebody like Nick Chubb. To me, that makes Nick Chubb a 1st-round pick. If you know that he's got those touches, and we'll see, you know, how he holds up with the workload here. But I think skill-wise, Nick Chubb can stack up with just about any of these guys here. I mean, I would put Chubb, she's obviously behind Jonathan Taylor, probably behind Delvin Cook, Derrick Henry, Eckler. I you know how I feel about, I'm going to miss out on Christian McCaffrey this year, possibly to my detriment, but I'll put McCaffrey above them just for the sake of this argument. And then you start to get real interesting with Chubb or Najee Harris, Chubb or DeAndre Swift, Chubb or Joe Mixon, Chubb with no Kareem Hunt back there. Even on, you know, what's probably going to be a subpar team led by Jacoby Brissett for at least 6 weeks. I still like what we can get out of Chubb, because he can also, I mean, he has proven capable of catching passes too. Sure, he just doesn't as much as he could have because Hunt's around here. So I bump Chubb into the 1st round if Hunt were to go somewhere. And I guess while we're talking about the Browns, I did mention, you know, with all those lower depth chart wide receivers and Amari Cooper at the top, we'll see what happens with David Bell during camp. I did take Donovan Peoples-Jones as Mr. Irrelevant probably a little bit, but we'll see how he gets used. And, you know, he's someone that could be used creatively, but, you know, he's the last pick in the draft, so he could be cut after week one if he sees less than 5 targets.
Is this our first Culver's bet where I say Anthony Schwartz is going to be the higher score over DPJ? Is that the worst Culver's bet of all time?
I'll take Donovan Peoples-Jones in that. Where's the nail? Stick it on the board.
I think Schwartz is also hurt, so you can talk to me in 2 weeks maybe if that's the
case. Actually, Schwartz is one of the few without a current injury designation on our depth charts, which are a great feature on RotoWire, by the way. That's what I use to navigate from, like, person to person that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, you see them all on our depth charts, and you can get a nice refresher of, you know, what's around them and all that. So just a quick plug there. He has been dealing with a knee injury, Schwartz, but he is active at last Saturday's practice, so 3 days ago was our most recent update. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
I want nothing to do. And you had mentioned Nick Chubb as a RB1 or sorry, 1st-round guy. Mm-hmm. If Hunt were to be traded, and again, I don't think either one of us saying Kareem will be traded. In fact, I would say more than likely he will not. It just doesn't make sense for the Browns to do so. I don't know if they, like, I think Chubb can catch the ball. I don't think they're going to do it though. Like, I that's where I'm. I think they would sooner put D'Ernest Johnson or not that Jerome Ford, they drafted in the 5th round this year, is going to be a pass guy. I just, they won't do that with Nick Chubb because they seem to be doing dumb things or are specialized in one role. And if that's the case, it's like, great. You know, people might price him up like you are talking about. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that value actually is guaranteed to be there, which is what I want in my 1st-round guy.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'd absolutely, you know, if Hunt were out of the picture, if I were at like the 12th pick overall, I would be happily taking him at the turn. For perspective, he went 21st overall in our dynasty, or not in our dynasty, in our 12 team redraft. And, you know, three picks away from me. And otherwise, I would have definitely been taking them at the 2-3 turn. There,
I have my Beat Joe Bartle NFFC draft Sunday, which we'll be reviewing on Tuesday, as well as getting prepped for the Stake League draft, which is occurring next week as well too. I'll be curious to see where Nick Chubb goes there, and if there's any helium with this Kareem Hunt stuff. I would just not be comfortable taking out the 12th spot if that were the case, even if Hunt were gone. So I guess the other more pertinent injury news, we did have Mekhi Becton suffer what appeared to be a knee injury, and in fact was confirmed to likely be a season-ending injury. That's your left tackle for the Jets right now. And there was some training camp weirdness happening already with him, but the fact that he will not be confirmed out with a knee injury for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. Dwayne Brown, the longtime veteran Texans and recently for the Seahawks, has been more or less rumored or confirmed to be joining the Jets. And I actually, like, the downgrade is substantial, but I don't know if it's going to really hamper the Jets offense enough. Where's your thoughts with this?
Yeah, so I mean, definitely a downgrade when you go from a second year player, a number 11 overall pick, who is you know, going to be a big piece of this team. But you know, I'm ready to take on the disdain of Jets fans right now and say that maybe they're just a little bit overhyped here because there's a lot going on. You look at all the pieces on paper. Dang, this looks like a great team here. But you know, as great as Zach Wilson's MILF game might be, we haven't really seen him do much as a quarterback. There's been a couple little flashes. He's had some games, but are we really ready to put all our eggs in the basket as him being a winning quarterback? And maybe if he's not, maybe if Flacco wins the job temporarily, which is unlikely, but you know, it could happen. It wouldn't shock me if Wilson were benched for Flacco at some point or another during the season just to get it together. So anyway, the team I think is overhyped in general. I do still like me some Elijah Moore though, so I'm going to contradict myself a little bit, but where is it coming from that we're guaranteeing this Bryce Hall workload? Where is it coming from that Breece Hall is he sitting there? You know, if you look at his ADP since July 1st, he's 39 overall, RB 18. So where is this workload coming from that we think that he's going to be worthy of a fourth round pick? Because that's pretty much the price that you have to pay to get him at this point. Now, I'm not saying Michael Carter or Tevin Coleman cut into this a bunch, but I did draft Michael Carter down in like the 9th, 10th round just in case. And, you know, we see overhyped rookie running backs quite a bit. And I know, you know, they want to take them and run them out while they're on their rookie deal. But maybe you can help me with this, Joe. I'm not sure where it's coming from.
You know, I don't mind what your end result is, but I think the process that you're going with is far different than mine. So in one way, yes, I think the Jets offense might be overhyped. I'm kind of more leaning towards the, even if Zach Wilson is like a little below average, like a Ryan Tannehill kind of guy, they have way too many weapons to fail. And I don't believe this Mekhi Becton injury is going to really impact the offense enough where you're really concerned about what Zach Wilson does. Again, if Zach Wilson is below average, let's just say he's average. Now we're talking about efficiency offense. The defense is pretty good. I think Robert Saleh, maybe I'm wrong, is actually a pretty good coach, especially defensively, which will only help things more. If there is going to be lost work for Breece Hall and he is not able to achieve his third, fourth round ADP, I actually have been seeing him in the third round, so fourth round would be a steal in my opinion. Let's just say third round ADP. It's not because Michael Carter or Tevin Coleman are cutting into the work. It's because guys like Corey Davis or Braxton Berrios or the 36 tight ends, they only have two, but like Uzama and Tyler Conklin, like these are all guys, and I don't think any of them are good. They are just guys, but that's four different guys that I just talked about that are going to be possibly into the fact we're all upset, all up in arms about Garrett Wilson and Elijah Moore, and rightfully so, at least in the case of Moore. But I think we're ignoring the rest of the people that can get involved. The Jets can realistically go 4 or 5 wide receivers deep. That's not even including Denzel Mims, who thinks he should be the wide receiver one for the Jets. He's wrong, but he thinks that's the case.
You have to, if you're a professional, right? You got to at least make yourself
realistic. Like that's not, you're not losing your competitive edge by saying, actually, no, I've sucked the past 2 years and he blamed it on injury and like, okay, whatever, I was fine. I'm not there. I'm not in his brain. I can't do that. But I'm just saying if the workload that happens for Hall that accounts for him to miss the ADP, it's either injury, which we all can't predict, or Berrios and the tight ends and Michael Carter getting a few catches here and there, that all nibbles away that instead of a 230 carry guy, Breece Hall is more like a 200 carry guy. I'll just say I feel comfortable drafting Hall in the third round. I would rather have Etienne ahead of him. Sure. I would rather have Dobbins. I mean, I can get Dobbins two rounds later.
But would you rather have Ezekiel Elliott ahead of him?
I would take Breece Hall for the upside. And I will
I'm taking Zeke on that one.
I will fully admit that I am falling into the rookie trap bias. And I think you have incorrectly fallen into that same bias with a different rookie running back that we'll probably talk a little bit later in the show. There is only one good rookie running back from this class. I'm telling you right now, Jake, there's only one. And it's not James Cook. It's not Kenneth Walker. I think it's Breece Hall.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I guess we'll see how that works out, you know, in due time.
I had mentioned J.K. Dobbins just real quick. He did return off the PUP list, unlike what Ian Rappaport seemed to suggest only a couple weeks ago. And Alan Sislowski was trying to make the walls fall down in Vegas when he was trying to convince me not to take Dobbins. It worked. I hate that he got me off my stance of taking
Dobbins. So what, did he take Dobbins right afterwards?
No. He didn't take Dobbins either. But he got me just shaken enough where I didn't stick to my morals, and I've been taking Dobbins everywhere. Dobbins is back, officially practicing. I'm not sure if you saw the videos, the training camp videos over the past couple weeks where he's catching passes. Let's just say I don't feel like he looks completely healthy, even if he's officially back off the pop list. I would anticipate he doesn't play at all during the preseason, and that makes me a little nervous. I'm still committed fully to Dobbins. I think he is a tremendous talent and is in one of the best situations that you can be from a running back perspective. Mm-hmm. But I would understand if people wanted to fade away from him.
Yeah, yeah. So here's how I view this kind of pathway for Dobbins. People are going to overpay for him this year. He'll be a little bit underperformed coming off the ACL injury. He'll still perform enough to hang around in maybe sixth, seventh round of the ADP next year, and that's when I'm going to snatch him up, give him a full year removed from the ACL surgery, and then we'll see what happens. So the same things with the Baltimore Ravens backfield. They apply to Dobbins as well here. You know, how much work are guys like Mike Davis and Gus Edwards going to get? Guys that shouldn't get work, but you know they will get work. Just because of how this offense is set up. And, of course, how much is, a sleeper MVP candidate. Everyone seems to forget about Lamar Jackson. How much is the quarterback going to vulture off the running backs in this offense? So those are both legitimate questions that have always been the case with the Ravens. I see no different this year. Dobbins is, what did I write down for his ADP here? RB21, 56 overall. So just a little bit, a couple spots below Breece Hall in that situation. And it goes back to our draft strategy pod about the importance of coming away from those first two rounds with at least one back. Yeah. Because even when you get up into the, late third, fourth, and fifth round, all of these guys have question marks, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you can have your pet favorites. I love Elijah Mitchell. Others might find Josh Jacobs fine in round six, or even mm-hmm. Antonio Gibson, who I've seen go to round seven now a couple of times. You can find your RB2 and convince yourself this person is good, but that's where I would never want them to be my RB1. And that's kind of how, and again, we outlined that too in past podcasts. We're going to be reviewing a couple of strategies, both from an auction perspective, and Jake finished a redraft league only a couple hours ago, actually, and talk about all those strategies after a word from our sponsors here. So stick around.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, so we're back, obviously, talking a bit of the strategy recap from the past couple of shows. Last week, we discussed an auction format stuff and different plays that you want to do there. But the week before that, we actually did go into detail about redraft. I specifically said I want to pick four because I'm hoping to get Justin Jefferson at pick four and then get whatever best running back happens. With this Matthew Stafford news and his weird throwing shoulder, that's out the door now. Like, I think Jefferson goes top three just about every time. ahead of Cup. So I'm going to change my answer if everyone's listening from 2 weeks now. Mm-hmm. I want to have the number three pick. Whatever I can get Justin Jefferson latest, that is my goal at this moment. Yeah. So,
and my answer still stays the same. If you have any chance to choose, you take the number one pick. You take Jonathan Taylor, and you get the best shot at the best players for the next couple of rounds here. Mm-hmm. And I guess, well, you know, why don't we just throw this into this dilemma? I threw it to a poll on Twitter, so yeah, go let your voice be heard for me, at Roto Jake. But, you know, we were discussing in our draft strategy show about just general quarterback, you know, when to take a quarterback. And we both kind of agree that the first three rounds, no matter who the quarterback is, whoever you're taking is a reach there. But then, you know, you get to that top tier of guys, you know, Josh Allen, Mahomes, Herbert. If they start slipping into the fourth or fifth round, then, you know, then we can bend a little bit and maybe it's going to be okay to, to compromise there. That? Yep. Yep. Yeah. That was you. I'll give you that. And, you know, normally I guess maybe I was skeptical because I never found myself in that situation before. In most, you know, non-industry, non-expert leagues, usually you're going to have people reaching for quarterbacks a little bit. That's just the nature of the game, and I'm fine to do it. I don't think I've ever taken a guy in, the QB, top QB 15 in my hometown friends and family league because people are taking second quarterbacks before I'm worried about my first. But in any case, I took first overall in the RotoWire Invitational. It's a 72-team deal split into six different leagues here.
12 teams, right? Like 12. Yeah. Like that's more or less what the listener needs to know is that this
it's a 12-team league. Yeah, league. Yeah, exactly. There's just an overall prize, right? It's like the fishbowl light only for RotoWire people, I guess. But in any case, so, you know, I took Jonathan Taylor first. You can see the results I tweeted, and I guess you can see which direction I went, but we'll get to that in a second. Coming back, I really didn't love my options at the turn, but I figured I'd start the tight end run maybe a little bit, and I took Mark Andrews, and I took Ezekiel Elliott, because I can live with Ezekiel Elliott in the third round, though I have my concerns. Third round, we'll get it. So coming back here at the 4-5 turn, the last pick of the fourth round, the first pick of the fifth round, it was late Thursday night. I had just gotten back from the Windy City Smokeout in Chicago where Zach Bryan absolutely murdered it. You know, Turnpike Troubadours were awesome. Willie Nelson, for the little bit we saw, was great too. Side note, but so I'm getting back, you know, I'm a little tuned up. I find out I'm on the clock for two picks here, and I'm looking, I'm kind of seeing my options, and I find that quarterbacks, Pat Mahomes and Justin Herbert, are both on the board. Not only are both of those quarterbacks on the board, a top receiver of each of them are on the board. Mm. So I had the opportunity taking two players. It was between taking Mahomes and Juju Smith-Schuster or taking Justin Herbert and Mike Williams. And, man, did I sit and agonize over this one a little bit.
That's because you drink it too much.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. And, I just went around the corner to ask our tech guys, and the first two people that answer immediately gave me a different answer here.
No, seriously?
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's more of a dilemma than I am thinking here. I ended up going Mahomes and Juju Smith-Schuster. I find Mahomes and Herbert to be maybe a little bit of a wash. Actually, speaking of Justin Herbert, can we see it on the cover boy right here? Yeah, RotoWire.com/magazine. You can get our magazine with Justin Herbert on the cover. If you're a subscriber, you get a couple dollar discount here. So definitely order that up. I love Herbert. He helped, he helped make me very competitive in a fantasy league, in one of my fantasy leagues that would have been otherwise just an absolute disaster last year. And, he actually almost made me think about keeping a quarterback in a two keeper league. But I'm going to go in another direction. Maybe we can get to that a little bit. But looking at the quarterback stacked up, it was almost a wash, maybe a slight edge towards Herbert. And I put Juju Smith-Schuster, at least the upside, the ceiling above Mike Williams, far enough to go ahead and pick the Patrick Mahomes, Juju Smith-Schuster stack here. Did I make the right call, Joe?
No. I'm the Herbert and Mike Williams truther. And obviously I covered the Chargers for RotoWire, so I feel
so we got a little bias there, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I mean they have put me through some really dark times, having to pretend like I care about the crappy team, especially when their special teams is so bad. So I would say I dislike them as much as I like them, but right now where the Chargers are at, I think I get concerned we're drafting Mahomes like he's guaranteed to have this electric offense they did with Tyreek Hill and really, mm-hmm. I guess just Tyreek Hill, but like the NFL kind of seemed to figure out Mahomes at times last year, and now we're taking away his best weapon and replacing him with what, MVS? And you and I both know that's not as great mm-hmm. as some people might make it seem. Whereas there is still very much a ceiling that I don't think Herbert has quite hit yet. The Chargers have went all in. I mean, just about all in from a competitive standpoint. That defense is significantly better, and they're depending on Herbert to be as good of a quarterback as he was last year. I think the offensive line improvements, especially drafting Zion mm-hmm. Johnson in the first round, that's going to be important to me. I think the ceiling is still there for Herbert, and we know he is a tremendous fantasy player. Mm-hmm. He still runs a little bit too. Mike, the one concern, you know, like if you just say, which QB do you want more? I'm taking Herbert every time.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But when you put them together, Mike Williams has a very, very long injury history. Like it's not absurd for me to say, hey, I don't feel confident Mike Williams staying 17 games. Neither do I. I have zero reservations that's going to happen for sure. But if you said that was the case, Williams and Herbert play the entire year, it's easily, I think, the two outscore the Juju Smith-Schuster and Patrick Mahomes combo.
Yeah, well, if there's any validation to my decision, there are two quarterback-less teams that passed on Herbert before Herbert went off the board in the fourth pick of the fifth round. And then Mike Williams didn't go off the board until the second-to-last pick of the fifth round. So receivers like Brandon Cooks and Amon-Ra St. Brown both went ahead of Mike Williams here. So, I mean, that spurs a whole other discussion. But anyway, go ahead, vote. Tell us what you think. Drop a comment. Tell us what you think. You can find my poll at Roto Jake. I really want to see where the consensus is on that, because you know some people seem really, really sure about it, but everybody that I've asked has been very, very split. And I guess, you know, a part of me to some degree thought maybe again, this could be very flawed logic, you know, we'll see, let me know on Twitter in the comments, but I thought a part of me seemed that the Herbert and that whole offense is built a lot on hype, whereas the Mahomes, he's done it relatively consistently minus his injury seasons. It was a little bit of a floor thing, but I do agree the floor thing, we would go to Williams over Juju because you don't know what you're going to get out of Juju. But again, you know, you got a guy who it's going to be his sixth year in the league. Yeah, he's coming off of injury. He's only 25 years old. He should be able to bounce back. He is on a one-year contract, which is probably what does it the most for me. You know, a guy, if you can't motivate yourself on a one-year contract at 25 to possibly get the biggest payday of your life and career, then maybe there's something else going on. But anyway, that's where I landed. I hope this discussion was interesting and productive, because it's a good spot to be in, right? You're first overall at the 4-5 turn, and you get to pick one of those two stacks. I mean, that to me is pretty brilliant. And I think either way would have been an excellent use of those picks.
This wasn't in our show breakdown 2 weeks ago when discussing good and bad redraft strategies. But I can tell you for certain, sleeping through your pick and forgetting it happened is definitely not a good strategy. So in that invitational, again, it's across 75 different teams, but we're broken across 12-team leagues. I'm in a different one. I had Josh Allen subbed to me in the second round. Like I was back into the second round. Not happy about that. I guess the only
– Yeah, that kind of ruins a draft when your second rounders, you get stuck with a quarterback.
It's fine because, you know, like he's going to produce, and I do think he's QB1 this year. Ironically, Mahomes was taken pick 11 overall in that league, so I didn't technically take the highest quarterback. Yippee.
Interesting. These are interesting because for perspective, so you ended up with Josh Allen in the second round in my league. He was the third pick of the fourth round.
Yeah.
You know, there's some sharp people in this league. There are very few things that I got away with, quote unquote, except somehow I took Hunter Renfro, who I didn't love, like 40 spots below his ADP. They basically forced me to take Hunter Renfro.
Yeah. Other than me just forgetting that pick was up, I have more or less followed the strategy that we had discussed 2 weeks ago. I did take Justin Jefferson at three. I was very happy about that. Mm-hmm. I got Elijah Mitchell as my RB2. We talked about that as well too. And I've loaded up on wide receivers, as much as you can in that like 7-9 range. You know, I love Drake London, Alan Lazard, Christian Kirk. I swear people in that league were listening to what we were talking about, because every one of them was taken within that round, and it was all in the seventh round above their ADP. That's fine. I think they're going to be more than fantastic in those spots, and it was not a bad value, but you have to kind of pivot a little bit. So I got Robert Woods and a few of those other guys. We have not completed that draft yet. That will be reviewed. At least my draft will be reviewed next show, along with the other draft prep we have going on, gearing you up for that season. We have mentioned auction strategy last week, and I actually did complete an auction draft. This was basically a friends and family auction draft that I was really interested in doing. Now, we played on the platform AutoNew, OTTONEU. AutoNew has been a partner for us in the past. This is not a sponsored segment by any means. I love the format, and I'll tell you right now, if there is one league in which I could choose to play in, it is this format. It incorporates the auction part, but also a Devy aspect and a little bit of keeper, because you can't actually keep these guys.
Man, they got to cut us a check. They're never going to get an ad read more beautiful than that.
At least me. I swear by this format again. OTTONU, auto new, is one of my. So I got a bunch of friends to go ahead and participate. Mm-hmm. It took 2 days to complete the draft. We did like 8 hours.
Is it a slow auction?
It is a slow auction, yes.
Yeah, slow auctions are a totally interesting thing, man. I love them. You know, funny enough, my first slow auction was for an MMA league that we did that went by DraftKings scoring over the calendar year. And holy cow, I didn't even understand the concept of a slow auction, but basically someone's nominated and then everybody has like 8 hours to upbid, or probably less in this case.
Yeah, we went by 30 seconds.
And every time, you went by 30 seconds, then it's not really a slow auction.
You have to, it was a 20 team or 20 player like roster for 12 teams. So you're talking about like 300 mm-hmm. plus players that have to get auctioned out over the course of 30 seconds.
Yeah, ours took a couple weeks. It was, there's like 4 hours on the clock, and every time someone makes a bid, the clock resets to like 1 or 2 hours, mm-hmm. right? So it gives basically everyone a chance to look at it, and then it stops at night and whatnot. And the other thing is you can have, it's not just one player at a time. You can have
multiple going,
seven, eight guys on the block at the same time. So basically before you go to bed, just check if anyone's bid too low. You can bid your current bid and what your max bid is, and to make sure you don't miss out on anyone. And anyway, slow auctions, totally different thing. It's a sidetrack thing. But it's an interesting concept to see how this is done in fantasy football, because we obviously preached so much last week that auctions are the superior format by a mile.
And I really do, and I love what AutoNew did, OTTONEU. We had talked about, so there's the top end guys are going to go really high, and you nominate them right away if you don't really want them, or just be prepared budget wise. And Jake, I swear, there's no inebriation here or anything like that. Like, I had every plans of following my budget. I got Justin Jefferson for $69. Felt great about that because we had a bunch of guys go really high. And then you look across the board at some of the values at wide receiver, and you're like, oh my God, I should have just waited. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, I think the first day, again, this is across 2 days, the end of the first day, there's a lot of mitigating factors that made some of the auction values happen. We had two guys fall asleep during the draft. Another one did the dishes for an hour. I have no idea why he was not absent. But that is a key point that we never talked about last week. If you are doing an auction draft, you have to have everyone present, because the economy of the league is dependent on everyone doing what they're supposed to do. Even if they're doing something stupid, at least you can counter that or react, whatever else. So 9 people drafting in an auction league that carries on, there were some wild values. But I thought overall, the idea of going and getting your guys in the middle rounds, right? We were kind of saying middle-ish area. That's where that first value of the top tier happens. And then being smart, productive with what your later ground guys ended up being good. There was a bunch of values. Again, AutoNew does like Devy stuff. So there's college people mixed into this.
Yeah, I see Tank Bigsby on your list.
Tank, yeah. I always try to get at least one college guy, and Tank Bigsby was the one. This is also a super flex league. And I'll be honest, you look at the QBs I have currently. It's just Matt Ryan, Davis Mills, and Kenny Pickett. Puke worthy as you could possibly get.
Well, I was going to say this, looking from top to bottom at your roster, Jefferson, Aaron Jones, ETN, Metcalf, Leonard Fournette, Keenan Allen, like, dang,
it's a good
you
team.
Had a pretty dang good draft, but then you remind me that it's a super flex of the number of leagues, and maybe you botched this one a little bit, but who knows, maybe quarterbacks will evolve and emerge as the season goes on. You look back at I hate to use Deshaun Watson as an example, but his rookie season, he wasn't being drafted, turned out to be an absolute stud, league winning type of pickup for people that punted quarterbacks. Maybe you'll find Mahomes' second season is probably a better example of that, where it's going around QB 12-15. Maybe you find something like that. It's a little tougher in Superflex, but I do wish you the best of luck with that.
I'll just say, at this point he's a friend of the show because we've mentioned him twice now, but Harry, our Stake League two-time winner from last episode, I did have him in this league as well too, and he stuck to that strategy of really having a budget and maintaining it and going and getting the values. Cooper Kupp ended up being a $61 player at 69. I liked his roster overall. So at this point, I'm just pumping Harry's stuff. Like, he should just be our auction dude every single time. But
yeah, so right on. Yeah, smart dude.
The inflation.
I was going to say, if you just kick that wall, he'll probably hear you and come in here.
The inflation part of this is going to be interesting now.
See, I was about to try to transition to that, and you beat me to it. No, great.
So we had talked about inflation last week, never really got a chance to get to it. You've been in the keeper league and auction league formats where this continues on for multiple years now. This is a startup league, so the inflation part isn't real for me, but you and I are both aware of that kind of concept. So I'll just, go ahead and discuss
inflation can be real for you because as a concept, inflation changes values of players that are being drafted as your auction is or your salary cap draft, we're supposed to say, is moving along. So, you know, you have a set of projected values based on your projections. Right. And if a lot of players, which you'll see often at the top tier of drafts, if a lot of players, for example, are going for $10-$15 above the projected value based on your algorithm, what's going to happen is there's going to be less money left for the same amount of available players. So players, the prices of the middle tier and the lower tiers, they actually all go down because there's, you know, you're set with a salary cap, right? So those prices go down, and it's kind of like you were talking about, if, you know, if Jonathan Taylor, Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, Christian McCaffrey all end up going off the board for $70-$75 in a $200 budget, guess what? You're going to get some pretty dang good receivers in the $15 range. And it can work. And, you know, this is mostly in redraft, and it can work in reverse effect too. If everybody, when you're nominating Jonathan Taylor, Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, those types of guys, if everybody is really conservative with their budgets and is paying, you know, 58, 55, 53, suddenly all of these players are going below their projected dollar amount. So what's happening is the rest of the players is going up because there's more money available for the same pool of available players. So, you know, if you're really crafty, you can maybe construct this in a spreadsheet, but this is one of the best plugs I can make for the RotoWire Fantasy Football Draft Kit software, the downloadable software. We also have a web-based version, but there's an option in auctions where you can click the use inflation button and update the dollar value. So after every couple of picks go off, the dollar values will adjust based on you know, who's off the board and who's still there and what their projected stats are. So hopefully I did an okay job covering that. And that's just inflation in redraft leagues, which, you know, which you mentioned, it definitely applies. Maybe more so in baseball sometimes when you're looking at the last of the tier and there's so many more different positions, but in football as well, you can kind of tell, like, do I get into a bidding war to buy $65 Joe Mixon? Or do I spread that money around, you know, four $20 receivers that are all going to be second or third round picks that is out of the reach of everybody else's budget because they spent too much? So it's a careful dance. It's a careful balance that you have to do in your standard redraft leagues. Now, the title of this show is Keeper League Strategy. So we promised we're going to get to some of that eventually. And that is one of the most important things, especially in the second year of a Keeper League salary cap slash auction format, whatever you want to call that, because people that are not familiar with inflation, they will get absolutely burned. Because what happens in, you know, in a lot of standard snake draft keeper leagues, you get to keep two players, for example. You have to forfeit your pick in the round you picked that player last year. In auctions, how do you decide that? What most leagues do is they will take the amount of money you paid for that player at auction last year and take that off of your budget this year. Some leagues with free agent pickups, they'll either make those $0 pickups or they'll make them the amount in fab that you bid on that player. So it's interesting either way. So, inflation happens to a whole new giant degree in keeper leagues because basically everybody that is being kept is being kept because they were had at some kind of value. Mm-hmm. So for example, I think I only paid $8 for T. Higgins last year. You know, just back of the napkins math here says T. Higgins is, you know, almost a $30 player. So, you know, there's obviously value there. I paid $6 for James Conner last year. Oh, look, at we have James Conner at $34 this year. Yep. So, you know, you get guys like that. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to not cut bait with Conner after a couple of weeks. But you get guys like that who create a ton of value. And those are your keepers. And, you know, maybe not to that extreme extent, but every single manager in your league is doing something similar. And they are they're taking players for much less money than what they're projected at. So what happens is inflation, right? So what happens is inflation is everybody has a ton of extra money. There's a whole bunch more available money for the same, for actually a shrunken pool of available talent. So what happens across the board is someone like Jonathan Taylor, who we could have at $60, $70, is inflation adjusted price is $80 to $85 because everybody is getting that kind of value. And everybody might calculate this in a different way. Obviously, I love the software. It does the calculation for me here, but it's a great way to sneak up in a keeper league because, you know, everybody, say in your first year, this is what happened in one of mine. In the first year, everybody was really nervous about blowing all their budget and wanted to be conservative in the auction. And they realized that people that went nuts early, they missed out on values late. So the second year, everyone else was conservative when they shouldn't have been, right? When you actually have to go over, you go and download a standard set of auction values off of any website, you know, RotoWire, whatever your choice is. And, those are going to be all way too low because they're not inflation adjusted for your particular league. So I ended up getting, you know, the equivalent of like four first round picks. I blew all my budget on my starting lineup, but so what? You should probably be spending 90, 95% of your budget on your starting lineup anyway. So I ended up, you know, like with $1 David Johnson, who was one of my keepers. And then it's tough from the era, but I ended up having just a full roster full of first, second, maybe a couple third round picks mixed in there. And I dominated. I won the league last year. And everybody learned a valuable lesson on inflation is basically what happens. And now nobody makes that same mistake again. Everybody's calculating. They have their own way of calculating to adjust dollar values. And, you know, maybe your friends will be sharper. Maybe your league mates will have that figured out ahead of time. But it's definitely something you need to know. And inflation is one of the biggest topics that I would say get a good understanding of when you're going into any auction or salary cap draft, really, but especially if there are keepers involved, because it changes the whole game. And I believe that is the end of my rant.
No, look at you, Jake, the teacher. Who would have guessed? Like that we could just put that as like the bio when he when he's Jake, but it's Jake the teacher now. But it's not the inflation part of it. Yeah, you're right. And like I do ask an expert features for RotoWire, and you know, as a person that works in the fantasy sports industry, and I'm sure you get the same thing. You get questions all the time. Hey, should I pick up this player or whatever else? Undefinitively, the number one comment I always get in like and questions I get are keeper questions. Like I will always have somebody sending me a key. It's like once a day now at this point as we've gotten closer. Keeper formats, while I don't know if people realize how popular they are by far the hardest, I think, from a decision-making perspective, especially if you incorporate the auction part, because there is that inflation aspect. So being aware of it, being mindful and kind of thinking out, again, the RotoWire software is great in that sense because it takes a little bit of the guesswork out, but you also have to have your tiers and incorporate everything we've talked about the last 2 weeks into that same type of process.
Yeah, and you have to use, I mean, even if it's not an auction, you have to use some kind of ADP or regular obviously value-based rankings are superior, but you need to find out your value, you know, the pick that you're forfeiting, where you are in your draft, the pick that you're forfeiting, how many, you know, do you think I can snag that same player for a little bit earlier in the draft and not have to worry about them? So you always compare, you know, with auctions, you know, it's pretty straightforward. There's a price tag by every player. You can calculate a literal dollar value, you know, for what it's costing you to keep each player and, you know, how much below cost you're getting to keep them. And, you know, you do the same thing in a snake draft. And so you first have to calculate that value, figure out your formula for there. Then you see, you know, then when you're picking out your keepers, you see the difference. And that's a good starting point, but you also have to think about positional scarcity too. And that brings me to a discussion about, you know,
I was going to say, Julia literally asked the question, what position group dominates your keepers over the last three or four years or so?
It's basically anything that you can put in the flex position.
There you go.
Yeah. For the most part here, because I mean, I think I had Justin Herbert in that same Higgins, and Connor league for around like $8 to $10 or something. It maybe it was a little more, but you know, we priced Justin Herbert out at $25. That's fine. Even if we priced Justin Herbert out at $36 and the separation, the dollar values gained was the same as those other players, I would probably end up tossing Herbert back. One, because I've already built enough equity to my current keepers that I could still buy Herbert at a similar price if I wanted to. Or two, you know, I'm just spending most of my money on, you know, for example, I take Connor and Higgins. I want to buy a first-round running back. I want to buy a first-round wide receiver here. And once I do that, I want to see if Kelsey's still on the board and if I can get him. Once I've done that, I've pretty much limited, well, one, my bench, but two, my available a lot of dollars for quarterbacks. So, you know what? And I'm okay with that if I end up with, you know, Higgins, Connor, you know, just the spitball names. If I end up with like Higgins, Connor, Chase and Joe Mixon, beautiful, you know?
Right. Yeah. And you know, there's different ways you can do keeper formats. Again, I would recommend incorporating the auction value for it, but let's just say that becomes too hard. I am in a friends and family league where it's more or less, no, we can't actually budget. I don't feel good about doing that. So we've stuck to the keeper format. And if I was to recommend one kind of keeper format, it would be the one where, hey, if you draft, let's just say Kenny Pickett in round 17 and he ends up actually being good, again, doesn't seem likely, but let's just pretend like he does. Mm-hmm. You get him for, it accelerates up every 2 years or 3 years. Mm-hmm. I like those kind of keeper formats because there is still a point where some of these star guys could cycle through, mm-hmm. or there's more decisions being made. Yep. And I had mentioned literally everyone asked me questions on keeper. We literally had somebody with no direction whatsoever. They just said pick two, Dalvin Cook, Najee Harris, Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs.
Jesus.
This is what I'm talking about. Like the keeper league conversation and questions that come from keeper leagues are constant and always unique, I think, in the sense.
Please, sir, your league is. In your four-team league, keep the two running backs.
That would be my advice as well, too. I'm taking the Najee Harris, Dalvin Cook combo. Maybe Diggs over Najee Harris. Maybe.
No, I'd take both the backs. For me, it's just easier to replace receivers with somebody serviceable than backs. So I'll shore up the backs the best I can.
I only bring this up, Jake, because we're rounding the end of the show. But you had taken Michael Carter, and we talked a little bit about the Jets at the beginning of the show. You had taken Michael Carter in your league. Somebody else was kind of recommending or asking the same sort of question. Mm-hmm. Would they rather have Michael Carter or Melvin Gordon? So can you confirm to this user, yes, in fact, Michael Carter is the next greatest thing since sliced bread?
Ooh, see, now again, my Michael Carter choice wasn't because I love Michael Carter. I think he's the greatest ever. It was more because they're going to get closer to a split than people are letting on, and Breece Hall is overhyped. The Denver thing gets very, very interesting because they're coming out in camp already and they're saying that it might be a 55-45 split. And Melvin Gordon has definitely been on my draft radar. Oh boy, this is a very, very tough dilemma. I'm going to have to.
This is a standard league, mm-hmm. 14 teams for the listeners out there, not the watchers of the video. The listeners, and this is standard. So Michael Carter, where theoretically would have more value.
I'm going to trust the ADP in this one and actually grab Melvin Gordon. You know, Gordon's RB 38 and Carter's RB 45, and the carry share might actually be similar between the two, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Gordon or Michael Carter getting 45, and I know that's going to upset some Breece Hall lovers out there. You know, I could see the carry share being very similar, but Denver just has the better offense. That becomes the tiebreaker to me, and it makes me understand, you know, why the ADP is the way that it is.
I think I would take Michael Carter even in the standard league, only because this is keeper, so theoretically we're unaware of what this person's setting is, but theoretically there's the opportunity to keep Michael Carter in the future. I don't know a scenario.
Oh, you know what? I totally overlooked that aspect of it. That could even it out quite a bit.
Whereas I think Melvin Gordon, this is it. This is the last mm-hmm. year, and it would have to be a really great situation for him mm-hmm. to retain any fantasy value. So that is kind of the needle.
But you could make the same case where like Breece Hall maybe takes another step and suddenly gets a 75% of that workload again. Right. I'm not sure I see that. And again, you're talking about the Jets. So, you know, we can't forget that. So that's a very interesting, that's a great question by whoever put that up.
The title of the podcast, right, was discussing some of these keeper and mm-hmm. dynasty related stuff. And I think the strategies we've developed over the last 3 weeks, or at least discussed, mm-hmm. can impact a lot of different phases. You have been touting yourself as the champion of the Dynasty League, right? And mm-hmm. getting James
Or just,
Cook.
You know, you could go ahead and have a really good draft, right? And then the strategy stuff goes out the window.
So that's the difference of the keeper leagues as opposed to the Dynasty mm-hmm. leagues. I love Dynasty content, and I love mm-hmm. playing in Dynasty leagues overall. But Jake has to make zero decisions when he has Jonathan Taylor and
exactly.
Derrick Henry.
So, and one more thing that led me to that draft is, you know, I don't want to, we don't, again, we're kind of closing up on the end here, but you kind of, in a Dynasty format, you have to decide if you're going to be the guy that is going all in to win, or if you're going to just stack up your team with young players waiting for the future. And to me, I went into that first year Dynasty thinking, man, you know, there's a lot of solid, reliable staff members on here, but you never really know how long any of these Dynasty leagues are going to stick together.
Oh, sure.
So I'm going to go ahead and try to win it right away. Now, I got the opportunity to take Jonathan Taylor at the back at, you know, at the, I think I had the 12th pick out of 14 teams. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and try to win this this year. And
this
I thought
is before he even got drafted by the Colts, mind you.
Yes. Yeah. This is before even, so I ended up taking, I took Derrick Henry 12 out of 14 is full PPR, and people thought, oh, the workload is going to catch up and all that stuff. And who knows, maybe it will this year. We'll wait and see. And I got Taylor coming back, but then I took Diggs and Keenan Allen with my next two picks, you know, with the thought process being, you know, Keenan Allen was pretty much, you know, he had a new quarterback possibly, or actually, did we even know that then? It's tough to take my mind back there. Keenan Allen was, you know, people didn't take him because of the dynasty factor, right? They're like, oh, in their head, that name's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. Diggs, it was his first year with the Bills, right? And so you kind of have to make that decision if you know ahead of time. I mean, that's the appeal of dynasty leagues, right? Everyone sees their famous their favorite team's GM and thinks they could do a better job, you know, common. This actually puts you in the seat, and you have to decide if you're going to be a buyer or a seller. And if you make the wrong move to be a buyer, you could paralyze, just absolutely cripple yourself for the next several seasons here. Or if you make a couple right moves, you can go. And you know, I've not been one to try to get youth. I've always taken my one first round pick, and then like for example, after taking James Cook in the first round, I ended up taking like Jonnu Smith and Curtis Samuel and just skipped rookies. I was like, none of these guys are going to help me this year anyway. I'm going to take guys that at least have a shot to help me. So making that decision, you know, you can't have one foot on both sides of the fence here. You have to decide if you're going to try to go for it, you think you can win, this is your time to win. Or if you know you don't quite have it this year and you're going to. And sometimes a couple bad injuries can happen in the middle of the season, and that'll make the decision for you. And and you know you won't quite have it this year, and are going to start trading away older assets for draft picks and younger talent. It's a balance of it's what makes Dynasty so fun and why it's a growing format that a lot of people want to play. I mean, you look at our sponsors, Dynasty Owner, Atnu, I mean, Owner's Box. There are so many of these sponsors over the years, these new sites, growing sites that, you know, are centered around Dynasty. And it's awesome. And hopefully we can help you with some of those questions moving forward as we hopefully shook out some strategy for you.
Yeah, and if we can't, we have a ton of different Dynasty-specific conversation that occurs on many of our other RotoWire platforms. Alan Slezowski does a great job breaking down our Dynasty content. As long as he's not razzing me about J.K. Dobbins and whether or not he'll be able to play, he's been great with a lot of stuff. And he's been doing it all off-season long and certainly gearing up here with all the probably rookie drafts really beginning, or at least getting to that point, certainly one to check out as well, too. That does it for us on RotoWire Fantasy Podcast Day, brought to you by Dynasty Owner. We'll be back again next week getting prepared for Stake League, reviewing a few of the drafts, and, of course, going over all the training camp news and notes that have occurred now past week one. We are going to have week one preseason games for everyone. We'll be reviewing all that and more next week. We are getting closer, ever closer, to start of the regular season, which is always great to see.